Hello, welcome to the Mac Show. Yes, we're here to discuss the week in Apple, all the things that have gone on or haven't in the case may be. We've got a few emails that have come in as well, and we've got a few comments that have been raised up in the chat room. One really sad story actually today, which from one of the members of the Slack room that said some, but there's a cautionary tale, if you like, within this one. But joining me to discuss the week, we've got a great panel, really, really good panel. Top left, Patrice, how you doing, brother?
Very, very good.
Oh, you've got some Cylon-y audio, mate. We need to get you to dial out and restart again, mate.
But before you do, say by your command.
Go on, Patrice, say by your command. Do as you're told.
I'm not really sure if you can hear me. I can barely hear you. Yeah. Maybe I should call in again.
Maybe, you think?
Yeah, by your command.
I mean, actually, it's fine. I can see that.
Okay, call in again. Next to him, last minute standing. Fine, fantastic substitute
you have
off
an
the bench.
Now, call though. From Patrice Brentamore.
How's that, Patrice?
We'll see.
No, it's still shit.
Right now, it's this. Right.
It's still shit. Restart, dude. I've just kicked in. There we go. How you doing, Jeffrey Gamet?
I'm doing all right, and I just want to point out that you gave me a last-minute call to be on the show. I said yes, and I beat everyone here.
Yeah, no, I was quite impressed with that, mate, and quite upset at everyone.
Yeah, so what's up with that?
I don't know. You're just trustworthy and reliable, and everyone else is as well, but just a bit later than you.
That has to be it.
I've just said let's just restart, and we've got the time, so there we go. Beneath him, from our man in Hawaii. How you doing, buddy? You're looking tired, dude.
Right. Yeah, I literally just woke up, and it's crazy, but I have been so freaking busy lately.
Really?
But it's all good. I'm getting there. I handle it. I got coffee.
Awesome.
Star Wars mug. I swear.
And now, you sent me a tracking link today. Mm-hmm. You sent our gizmo.
Yes, sir.
It's on its way. And it's taken USPS, not saying that they're crap or anything, but it's taken USPS 2 days to move it to a place that's 28 minutes away from you.
Yeah, pretty much. It's not even that far. It's literally about 2.5 kilometers away, the distribution center from the post office near my house. And it took them literally 2 days to move it that far.
That's
and
cool.
I'm just like, wow. And it was really mind-blowing is I had no idea how expensive shipping something 5 pounds to the UK costs. Holy crap. I almost popped the turd.
Well, how much do I owe you, mate? Because I'll...
Never mind.
Oh, come on, man. No.
I'll beat it out of Jeff.
Okay. Well, you bashed... If you come over, you bashed tickets down on me for you and Karen.
Did you hear Jeff's comment?
Which was what?
Oh, now there's a party now.
Jeff enjoys a good bashing.
Yeah.
So I'm led to believe.
Yeah, we're talking in code now, right? Because otherwise, I'm going to be really disappointed.
you've got the connections, mate. I'm always surprised that you still go to see what's the name? The place that, after Christmas.
CES,
thank you. CES. When there's no AVN awards, because I thought you used to love tying the two together.
Well, now it's two separate trips.
Good man.
So he has two websites, the Mac Observer and the Crack Observer. So
yeah.
The other one, he has to go. He gets to write it off.
and last but by no means least.
Brilliant.
It's our man in the broom cupboard who's now got a green screen, which is just really surreal, mate. How you doing, Adam?
Messing with you. Good. I'm good. Although, like 2 seconds ago, my entire Ethernet died out, which is why I went away for a little bit.
Okay. And you've come back
weird.
With a better crop to show your logo of your
there
sponsors.
We go. The Podgineer.
Have you been well?
I'm good, yeah. Hey, I dropped my Apple Pencil in the pool yesterday, though.
And
that was
it's still
interesting.
Working.
Apparently, it's waterproof because it came out fine.
Wow. IP67, yeah. Is it? Or...
It went to the bottom like a submarine.
So you haven't taken... So the thing is, you could put your iPad Pro in a Ziploc bag and go down and see if it still worked just for the pure journalistic experience.
I think in water, the capacitive stuff gets all messed up, so wouldn't quite work.
Patrice is back online. Let's give him a call. Don't worry about the noise.
Oh, you lost him at the same time you lost me, or?
No, I cut him off.
No.
Because he was...
He was misbehaving.
Oh, he was silent audioville, so... And now he's not answering just out of spite because he hates me. Ian is watching the show on an iPad Pro with a split screen with Safari and Colloquy running at the same time. How's that audio, nice. Patrice? Oh, that's not good, is it? Oh, he's staring down to the left.
That's probably a bad sign.
That looks like a bad
thing. It's also a pensive kind of stare. He looks sad.
It looks like you're looking at me like you want to fight. I just look like this.
Kind of is.
He's forlorn.
Oh, dear, he's gone. No. Oh, we'll start without him then. Oh, he's back now. He's back in downloading Pornovision.
Yeah, start with that.
What, how much porn are you downloading at the moment, Patrice? Because you're really Minecraft.
Zero. Everything should be offline.
Excellent. First story then to talk about, and I thought this was an interesting one, maybe not from a good standpoint, perhaps. ZDNet said iPad Pro, Apple's enterprise-grade offering, is an urban myth. And I don't know what they think. It says to get the enterprise market, Apple's got to get messy, it needs to take risks, and it needs to rip off the Band-Aid. And that's a story by Jason Perlow for Tech Broiler. And it was republished in ZDNet. And I've got to say, I think the basic premise of that story, that question in my mind is, I don't think Apple's ever really given us stuff about the enterprise market per se. They kind of, my thoughts today, we talked about this quite a lot in the chat room, and one of my points was they're very passive about it. If you come to them and say we want an enterprise solution, they've got people that can help you, and they say, okay, fine, we'll help you. But they don't seem to want to go out, certainly, and get the desktop enterprise solution. And then someone made a comment about, well, don't forget they've got iPhone, and iPhone is bring your own phone kind of thing, and that's really got into the enterprise space now. And I don't think they even went out for that to start. They set out to kill BlackBerry. No. I don't think that the enterprise market is something that Apple is that bothered about to even get to this point.
You hit the nail on the head. That's what's going on. Apple doesn't really care too much about the enterprise. I think in their mind, it's the same kind of space as the pro market for them. They love to have those people around and they like to make those sales, but it's not a focus of the company.
You know what I think is cool? Their non-focus, according to numbers that were in, the mid-October, their non-focus efforts gained them $25 billion in enterprise business. So ZDNet, where they republished this, has been out for about 35 years, and they've never come close to $25 billion. So maybe they should shut up.
I don't want to do it to slag off ZDNet. They've published a piece that's a conjecture piece and then maybe, you know, has grabbed a few links and that kind of stuff. But I just, I in my own head, I've just never seen Apple as any way biased towards enterprise as an aggressive thing. They've always been a passive thing towards it. Jeff, you had a point.
Oh, yeah. Apple's current approach to moving into enterprise markets was to partner with IBM and let IBM sell the stuff for them. So that it's definitely a different attitude for Apple, but still they're not addressing the enterprise market themselves. Of course, maybe this is a thing where Apple gets, we've never been good at this part, but IBM is. So why don't we partner with them and let them do the part they're good at, which is get stuff into the enterprise. We'll do the part we're good at, which is make these flexible, useful products, and it's a win for both companies.
I mean, is there genuinely a market for any tablet in the enterprise market at the kind of level that people perceive? Because apart outside of Office integration that you might get with the Surface, I think, you know, if you use a tablet at all of any description, it's usually something that's a niche activity that you want to do where you then want to generate something which you then want to kick out to a main server via an email or via an upload. And it's not actually something that the company couldn't exist without the tablet. I don't think there is an enterprise niche necessarily with tablets.
You know, I tend to agree with you on that. And one of the things is there's some very particular parallels, and it depends on what they're calling enterprise. Now, I know whenever we're on the show with Righty, Righty has some very specific definitions as to what is enterprise. And I guess some people, and I'm going to say, and I will go out on a limb and say, even for me, sometimes I have a hard time separating the lineage between enterprise and, say, a business person using the app. Because if you go to your local coffee shop, you want to grab a bagel, donut, whatever, there is undoubtedly an iPad with Square or, you know, Quicken or something on the desk that is taking your money. They're everywhere, especially when you look into small mobile-oriented transaction-style businesses. But I think in most cases, you're speaking of your hospitals and your airlines and, you know, the larger, like enterprise, meaning 500 to 1,000 employees or more or something like that. And you do have very specific niche categories where the iPad is, whereas, like, you know, the pilots on almost every major U.S. airline uses them for tech manuals now. They're not doing something where you're going to generate a very specific thing, but they're using them basically as an oversized reader because it's better than flight books. But why do people poo-poo that as if that's not an enterprise task? According to his article, he's talking about some very specific things. And I'm agree with you, Ewan. I don't think there's any tablet that does all of the specific things that he's saying in the article. So I don't really get it. And remember, this was written before the iPad Pro got into heavy swing. So a lot of the stuff that he had ticked in the article, the iPad Pro has surpassed.
Well, it depends on, too, what part of the enterprise that we're talking about. And I put in that Slack channel some numbers. I think in 2015, the numbers I found is that Apple has about 60% of the mobile device space in enterprise. So, of course, that includes iPhone, you know, executives with iPhones and iPads as well, and it's not really broken out. But more and more, that's where Apple's making an impact in the enterprise. And so if you're talking about desktops versus mobile, these are kind of different conversations as well, I think.
Let me ask you a question, Ewan.
Yeah, go on.
All right, so there was an article published recently. I think it was Petapixel. Don't mark me on that. And they were talking about how many people are using iPhones in the professional photography space, right? Now, initially, my brain went, what? But then what everyone forgets about is your reporters and your, you know, your street guys that are out there doing standard issue journalism that are taking all these photos with the iPhone. They technically count as professional photographers, because they're taking a photo, they're getting a check for it. But I think what most people like us would line that to doing portraits or doing, you know, documentation or doing landscapes and some stuff, that's what many people would call. So I think a lot of it is the new definitions don't necessarily match what we're used to hearing. And so that also can skew the numbers a piece.
Well, I mean, I go back to last summer and the summer before. When I had a Windows phone, I had the 1020, and I was out with a firm, and they said, look, we want some kind of really instant feedback because we want to stick some stuff out on Twitter. So can you, some of the shots that you take, you know, they're great shots, thanks ever so much, but can you give us some really instant feedback on that and something we can show out on Twitter on a you know, hour-by-hour basis? Yeah, okay, I can do that. And they'll be good images, don't worry. So I went out with my 1020 and I took pictures, and I was emailing after I shot them straight back to a Gmail account that then other people could ping into to get these images from. And stuff was going up on Twitter like an hour after I'd shot it. Mm-hmm. And then one of the pictures the following morning was was in the London Evening Standard. And it was kind of like, wow, that's pretty cool. I take that with a phone online,
There's another space.
Email it, and it's, you know, the London Evening Standard says this is a good enough photo to publish in the evening edition of the paper.
There's another area where those pictures are, the phones are valuable, and that is if you need something very, very small and as you said, quick and dirty.
Well, no, these things were pumping out 36 megabyte DNGs. So yeah, I was using them afterwards as well.
I wasn't talking about the size of the picture, but the size of the device. The iPhone is small, and sometimes in tight spaces, it is just quicker and easier to use it. Matt Granger on YouTube has talked about that he uses his iPhone every now and then.
No, I mean, if you look at anyone that's carrying a camera that takes anything bigger than a phone does in terms of space, they're an amateur through and through. I mean, you can almost guarantee that if you find a belt that's got a fast clip that you can put your camera on, there's no problem alive who's ever going to buy that, because, you know, I could really do with my £3,000 lens with a £3,000 body via a single spigot that's shoved into the bottom of the 3/8 being held on by a clip on a belt that doesn't fit me very well. You know,
what could possibly go wrong?
Because I need fast fast access to it. You go to any sports venue and you'll see what a professional photographer would do. They will have a strap. The strap will be around their neck or around their shoulder, and the lens will be hanging down, and it'll be banging against every sodding thing that's kicking around the place. Yep. It's you know, no one ever buys that kind of rubbish. So I don't think the iPhone is not better than a camera. I would, you know, if you said, right, I want a picture that I'm going to blow up and put up on the wall in reception, I'm never going to take that with an iPhone. I'm never going to take that with a Nokia 1020, not in a million years. Because it just is not good enough. There still is not good enough. The improvements in photography have been massive, I grant you. And the iPhone is fantastic, and it would be great for reportage, but it's not even close to doing stuff that you want for decent display advertising.
And the proof in the pudding in that is all of the newer cameras that are coming out right now are all having the ability to automatically, as they store to the SD card or store to the internal SSD, it automatically bops a copy over to your iOS or Android device so that you can do what we were speaking of earlier and get it into the LES in a couple of hours, but yet you can take the high quality version and use it to make the picture that's going to show up in reception. So we're seeing that happen, but I guess my parallel to that was basically you would consider the LES an enterprise level company, right? And if you, since you took that photo with your iOS device, then that's an iOS device being used in an enterprise environment. And those things get slagged off. But I think, like you mentioned earlier, or I think Adam mentioned earlier, that's a level of that 60 some odd percent that is where these large corporate officers are using iOS devices to do various things for their company. So yeah. I think part of it is the definition of enterprise is not blurry, but it is getting grayed on the edges. And it's what the device is doing in the enterprise level and its level of work is being grayed on the edges. Because when you go now to the BMW, I took my car in for service. The guy comes out with an iPad in his hand. He walks around the car, and it used to be a convertible like Dell, you know, the one where the laptop flips over and clamps, and he flips this way and he can type. But now the dude has an iPad. He's going around. He's taking pictures of the car and putting it in, saying that there's no dents before they send it into service. So if there's a dent when it comes back and I flip a gasket and I like start choke holding people at BMW, you know what I mean? Like that, I guess that's enterprise. You got to count BMW as enterprise. But I think people would say if all he's doing is checking in your car using, you know, photos and notes app or something, then that doesn't count. Well, these guys did write their own custom app to do that. So that does count. And I'm like, does it matter if you write your own app or not?
Nope. Oh, I think being in the enterprise space isn't about the activity that they do. It's about the integration of the employee with the work that they conduct. So it's not about, you know, a journalist would take a phone picture and then bounce it up to their iCloud and then go to their Mac and pull it down and stick it into an editing package that would then go to an editor, and the editor would then put that in the paper. That's an enterprise application. I don't deny that. But I think you're looking at whatever application that you're in. I mean, I think, you know, to a certain degree, the enterprise space is looking more as well at things like running trains, running nuclear power stations, running accountancy organizations, things that are all traditional Windows environments, if you like, you know, is what people are looking at seeing as the enterprise state rather than the creative arts package, which have always been fairly dominant by Apple standards. But I still go back to my original statement. I don't think Apple is looking actively for that market. They will fulfill it passively. You go to them, they will help you, but they're not looking to grab market share in that space at all, even with the iPhone.
I agree and disagree with you. These two things that we're kind of talking about come together, because I agree with you that they're not looking at that space if we're talking about back-end IT stuff. You know, standing up servers, running infrastructure, putting, you know, iMacs on desktops, and or even putting notebooks into place. But as Jeff was alluding to earlier, through their partnership with IBM, I think they're very interested in the enterprise for their mobile offerings, for iPhone, for iPad. And I think they are doing some focused efforts there. They're not also spending a lot of time and money and resources on that space because it's a highly competitive space in terms of dollars and numbers, and Apple likes to have big profit margins. I think Ian was commenting in the chat room earlier. You know, there's just going after desktops and servers in that market, there's just not a lot of, and I think I put this in the Slack room, there's a lot of, not a lot of meat on the bones for Apple. You know, they've got to come in, they've got to be like the lowest bidder to get the big contracts, and that's just not what the company's about. So they're focused on the consumer market with where they can get those high profit margins, and then in enterprise, it seems to be mobile, you know, for the kinds of applications we're talking about. So they might go in with a construction company with IBM and staff the field guys for, you know, on job site with iPads. And they are going after that space, or a hospital or something like that. But they're not going to the hospital's IT department and saying, let's redo your whole back-end infrastructure totally. With Apple hardware.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. Yeah, good discussion. Good discussion.
I found the name of the company, by the way, Ewan, and we don't have to talk about it, but it was Bechtel. It's B-E-C-H-T-E-L.
Bechtel, they're a huge engineering firm. They've been around for years. My dad worked for them in the 70s.
Why?
Yeah, so what happened was our buddy Kai, they wrote this app that puts sensors into the bridge while they're curing the concrete for the pavement. And what it does is it gives them a feedback that the thing is curing at the proper temperature and eliminating, you know, damages because, you know, San Francisco bridges have to survive earthquakes. So they use special things with this iPad app that they wrote. It tests the tensioning on the cables. As you know, they take like 300 cables to make the rope that holds the bridge up. And as they did the new expansion on the Bay Bridge and then some reconstruction on the Golden Gate, they were using it to sample the concrete as it's curing to make sure that it's done properly. And I'm like, that was one of the bigger stories of like a large company doing some pretty heavy enterprise stuff. Bechtel is big enough on its own to count as a whole enterprise job for any company. And the fact that they're partnered with Apple because they're across the bay from each other. I'm sure they're good for a good chunk of Apple's $25 billion in enterprise.
That could work. We've had an email. I thought this was quite an interesting one. Phil Huxtable still going on about his about my accuracy and my figures on the show the other week. But sorry, I've got his name wrong as well. It's not Phil. It's where did we tweet me? Steve Huxtable. There we go. Apparently,
that doesn't help with the accuracy argument.
I was referring to the 5 and the 5S, and they are 4 inches, and I didn't say they were 4 inches and that kind of stuff. So there we go.
I thought you were referring to Bill Cosby when you were saying Huxtable.
Join us tweeting him. Yeah, I was on the Mac show last week disagreeing with the host, Ewan Rankin, at every turn, and I've just replied to him. There's a key for that, dude. So you're going to have to join the back of it. But we've had one that's from Michael Basile. Ewan, just love the Mac show and the panelists you have. Really informative and fun to listen to. They make a humble suggestion. We've been listening for years now, and the one thing that I've really thought about on BTM Mac was the bash in the US. There's no way I'll ever get the funds together to come to the bash in the UK and have a curry with you. So since many US panelists have never made it to the bash either, why not enlist them to have a BTN Mac bash in the US?
We have that.
Well, no, he's talking about a BTN bash in the US.
You should come commandeer Mac Stock or something like
Mac
that.
Mac Stock is a BTN sponsored year, we'll get Muller to talk.
We can do a little side conference or something, or a little, you know, before or after.
I'm going to go to San Diego and eat tacos at Adam's backyard.
Yeah, no, that's it. That's what I'm saying. Many times I've heard you lament that there's no more Mac Worlds to come to here in the States, and I hope that you come out to the US Mac Bash. I'd love to thank you in person and shake your hand for all of the wonderful content that you provide us over the years.
Well, we may need to chat, Ewan. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Go on.
Because I just actually met with some guys yesterday to talk over some things related in this space. So
did you say talk?
We should maybe do some talking.
Okay, we should do some talking then. Yeah, if it's my bash, then the wife can't object, right?
Yep. I mean to make fun of you.
My backyard's not that big. Someone asked in the chat room. But, you know, there is a pool. We can see how many people we can jam in that.
How many Apple Pencils it'll hold.
As long as no one pees, I'm in. But
I got a barbecue. We'll cook up some burgers and hot dogs or whatever. Do the full full US flavored version of a BTN bash.
Oh yes, some that's what we need. Some brown. Well, of course. Now Doc is the connoisseur of roasting meats.
You guys killed me with that last week.
So you see now I got to say like to everyone, I want to apologize publicly to Doc because I did use those images without his copyright consent.
I don't give a crap. I'm with freaking what's his face stuck in customs. I'm with that guy. If you put it on the internet, copyright is over.
Terry Ratcliffe.
Sorry, and I met the guy like 8 times. I can't believe I slipped that one. Yeah. Anyway. I'm with that. If I put it up there, it's open.
But were you shocked, dude, at how much roasting meat there is on your Instagram profile now? I mentioned it.
Shut up. We have a thing in our country called pleading the fifth.
On the grounds you may incriminate yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Bit late, dude. Yeah. Bit late.
Doc, your Instagram feed is inspirational.
You know what's funny is I went to a birthday dinner, Fat Tuesday. Right before I go on my meatless binge for the next 45 days. And I was going to post it, and I was like, no, F you, and I'm not posting.
See, you know you've got a problem when you roast meat in private and don't tell your friends. See,
It was at a Korean yakiniku, so it was in public. But
so
I don't know if you guys have those things there, but they're pretty epic adventures if you ever get to sit down and go to one.
See, the thing is, when I wake up first thing in the morning, I think, God, I fancy a drink. But you wake up and go, God, I want to roast some meat.
On a stick. You forgot the important part.
Oh, man. Yeah.
It has to be on the stick.
Let's not get into that. Apple Music is... No, dude, steady on. Apple Music is officially launching on Sonos tomorrow. Now, that was posted on February the 9th on Mac Rumors. And
it's out now, yeah.
Well, no, I looked and I can't find it. Like, it says, I can find all the rumors that say it's coming yesterday, but I can't actually find a story that says it's here.
I got the update yesterday. It's in the software update for you.
Yeah, but there's no story.
You know, when I included it as a sideline in a story that I wrote because they at the same time, they released a study they did about the effects of playing music out loud as opposed to just listening to it through headphones and how that related to individuals and groups. And one of the big things that I noticed in the study was that people that were listening to music together were having sex 67% more than people who weren't. And I'm like, now here's a story. So I
watch films with the wife and you know what he's saying is,
oh, by the way, you can get this.
So me and the wife, we really love our films, and every night we'll probably watch a film if you know when I'm not doing the shows and that kind of stuff or I'm away working. So what you're saying is I shouldn't be watching films, I should be listening to music.
Well, it depends on what your agenda is.
So
Netflix and chill,
but there's only,
or Apple Music and chill.
There's only so many times you can listen to Let's Get It On before she goes, what are you looking at? What are you pulling here? Is there an agenda?
So what you're saying is that this is you and isn't picking up what you're putting down.
Mate, I
who's putting what down?
I can't reach it. It doesn't reach to any surface to put it down anymore.
So, good thing people are flexible, bendable, and I should probably stop right now.
So I haven't got Sonos. It's an Apple accessory I've failed to purchase over the years. And I'm a couple hundred quid better off as a result. But I have got Apple Music, and I got to say, I do like it. I do like it a lot. I think Apple Music is absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. And have I got my £15 a month out of it? No, but I'm quite happy with the £15 that I've paid because it's there when I do need it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I'm not a constant. It's not like I've got a Spotify account and all I do is listen to Spotify, like some of the people were. I've got my Apple account, but... When I, you know, I'm driving in the car and, you know, I've done my podcast. I can't listen to any more speech anymore. So I'll tell you what, I'm going to go play some 80s music, play some 90s music. And it comes up and it plays some stuff. And the other night, Sharon said, I'll tell you what we'd really like to do. Where are all the Ella Fitzgerald albums that we used to have? So I didn't even bother looking on the home computer for it. I just went through, picked up the Apple TV, played some Ella Fitzgerald, and it played Ella Fitzgerald for 4 hours and didn't repeat a single song.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and that's my £15 worth it right there. I'm fine with that. And there's a bit of me sitting thinking, I've got an Apple TV, and if I had a Sonos device, could I then link that, and then we get better audio? And oh,
yeah, you do.
Yeah. You don't background music when you work, Ewan?
I don't. I tend to. So my working day is come in, set up the iPad Pro, and then I'll try and look on Sky, and I'll put some cricket on. So the Big Bash League, which was an Australian cricket league, 20-over cricket, through the whole of the winter, that was, you know, from sort of 15th of December through to middle of January, all I watched was, like, I'd come in and I'd sit the cricket on, and then I'd listen to the commentaries and stuff while I was editing over on the screen, and then all of a sudden I'd be like, wow, and I go and watch the wicket, and then I come back. And that's my kind of enjoyment. And I don't find that too intrusive, but sometimes when I get music on, I actually struggle to concentrate with music on. Mm. I don't know why.
Yeah, so I found a station on Apple Music, and there's two different ones, and they're work-oriented. And so what they do is they give you the stuff that you know and love, but they give you the instrumental versions. Mm. And then so you're kind of vibing to it in the background. Like, there's, you know, the recommended for you. I just put in Apple Music. I put in work music, and then I put in one brain music. And they they both sing you really cool songs. They're kind of chilled or relaxed. It's sort of like an ambient house, like the early 88, 89, like UK house music. And it's very chill. It's very sublime. It plays great beats. You're kind of grooving. It's a little up-tempo, but there's no words. And so I feel I can fully function on those. But when there's words, yo, I'm singing. And then so Missy dropped a new album. I'm listening to Missy. I stopped right in the middle of what I'm doing, and I'm dancing in the room by myself. I literally had customers pop in, and I'm in the middle of doing a little, they're like, I'm like, let's crack myself up laughing, because I'll get into it because I'm a music guy. But I really have found the recommendations that Apple's been putting together since they're much better at curating than the original free trial. During the free trial, a lot of people took a piss at it, but it's gotten so much better, and the recommendations they send me are amazing. And I've been listening to old jazz. Acoustic Alchemy is a great listen to if you want to do some work.
I listened to a lot of Gatecrasher when I wanted to zone out of stuff. So I used to be I was a good golfer. I had a 4 handicap. And if I went down to the range to practice, this was before I had kids. If I went down to the range to practice, I would put Gatecrasher on, and I'd have it on a set of earphones. And they'd be, this is where I got the idea for, you know, over the back earphones, and they go over the back down to an MP3 player on my iPhone, and I'd be just swinging, hitting balls, and it's shoop, we're going in the background. And I loved that because I could zone out from it. I loved the music. I loved listening to it. I listened to the tunes, but there was nothing ever that drew me into a lack of concentration. I used to really get focused when I used to do that. Yeah. And I can't seem to do that anymore. It's like I'm easily distracted. Maybe I've got issues.
Here's the thing about Sonos, because it took me a long time to end up buying my system because of the price. It feels a lot like it feels when you're buying Apple gear, right? It's kind of expensive. Yeah. It stings a little bit once you get it, but then or when you make the purchase. But once you've had it and you start using it, you like never regret that you spent that money.
Just playing the Ella Fitzgerald the other night, I didn't regret it at all. Mm. In one podcast, I've talked about Gatecrasher and Ella Fitzgerald. Eco Bob in the chat room says, he's basically dreaming if I'm saying a couple of hundred.
Yeah, you.
The Sonos player is wonderful, but damn, it's expensive, says Eco Bob. Yeah. So
the only thing I don't like about Sonos right now is that it doesn't support AirPlay directly. I mean, you can do the setup I have with an AirPod Express, and do it that way. But it could include it. Others have done it. Sonos hasn't, and that's okay, because I use it every day. So there's
that bother.
I mean, at least for podcasts.
That would be nice if they would add that, but having the support for Apple Music now, because I do everything with Apple Music and iTunes, kind of solves that problem for me. But I know that's not for everybody, you know. Mm. It would be nice if they'd throw in AirPlay support.
Yes.
You can't understand why that's not there.
It seems like a weird omission.
Yeah. I mean, I know AirPlay, the code is available for Linux even, and those boxes are small Linux machines, so... I don't see why it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be possible.
I've had 2 weeks of weird emissions, boys. So, the other thing that really spooked me the other week. So here I've got my Mophie juice pack, which I got to say I actually quite like. It's not particularly huge, and it does a good job. But they don't license. They license the Lightning port into the computer to the iPhone, obviously. But then they go to a USB micro USB out. That doesn't do data. So when you plug it into your computer using a USB, it's like,
that's
I can't
really
do any
lame.
Data. And it's like, what the fudge is that about? Can't be doing with that, mate. Son, I'll sort your crap out, mate, because that's the same kind of thing. Why would you have a device that works with Apple stuff and then not do AirPlay? That's just bollocks. That really is bollocks. There we go. We're not going to spice it up for you. Huge number of Mac applications are open to the hijacking from the Sparkle Updater vulnerability. A pair of vulnerabilities in the framework that some apps use to receive automatic updates leaves them open to man-in-the-middle attacks, according to a report from Ars Technica, covering a security flaw that was first discovered by a security researcher named Radek in late January. How viable is this? How vulnerable are our likely listeners to be?
Not super.
Yeah.
Especially if they've upgraded their software, because Sparkle put out a patch for this, and most of the apps have put out updates.
Right.
I guess the workaround, if you're worried because, what happens? Because I thought about this too. I have the version that has the vulnerability in it, and now to fix it, I've got to update the app, and I'm going to be running the vulnerable update, right? So if you're worried about that, just go to the go straight to the website, download the updater directly, and then just run it. I think VLC was one of the ones that was pointed out, and they've already been updated and patched. So it's kind of like it's not
really
much of an issue. And if you're not on an open Wi-Fi network,
there you go.
You know, then you're also not, there's not much concern, because you'd have to be on a Starbucks with someone sniffing packets or something like that to get hit by this.
Jeff, you were just about to agree, maybe.
But. Oh, yeah. I was going to interject, but Adam totally hit the point. If you're not on a public network, this is not an issue.
Yeah.
Because someone has to be sniffing packets to be able to conduct their man-in-the-middle attack. And if someone is doing that on your own network, it's probably someone you know, and they're being a jerk, and you can deal with them in whatever way you deem appropriate.
The other thing that wasn't really pointed out in a lot of these articles too is if you are on a network and there is a man in the middle thing, I believe you get an HTTPS security alert thing saying, or no, it's not HTTPS. There is some sort of security alert I think I read about that even pops up that you'd have to kind of, blow through as well or ignore.
Which I'm sure some people would, but still, it's out of place, and I'm assuming is enough to stop a lot of people from going forward.
Breathe easy, and keep your updates up to date.
You know, the Sparkle, this is like the second or third time that they've attempted to attack the Sparkle thing. I remember this from maybe like 4 years ago, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just kind of funny, like, people in the press space and even in the security checking space, they're really, really working super, super hard to try to find something that's a vulnerability to Apple.
And a vulnerability doesn't mean it's exploited.
I'm just saying it's super funny. Like, they work really, really hard at it, and it's always something that requires the user to do a almost limity snickets level of unfortunate events in order to get to that. I'm like, stop it already.
Yeah, and it's not that surprising. I mean, even Sparkle, it's software someone has written, so there will be issues with it. That's just how software works.
Now, if there's any blame to point with this particular vulnerability, it would be at the developers themselves, because another part of this is that what opens it up is if the developer is running the Sparkle update and connecting to a server and not using SSL, not using an HTTPS connection, which in the documentation for the Sparkle updater, Sparkle points out, don't do this. You should be using an HTTPS connection. And so in many cases, it's the vulnerable apps are vulnerable because the developer didn't follow the directions when implementing the Sparkle update.
And that's
so
right.
Yeah. Hence the reason why we need more female developers, because they're more likely to follow the directions.
Oh, don't come out with that crap.
It was a joke. I'm sorry. I'm glad Kelly's not here to jump in.
In general, I mean, that is something. I'm a developer. I'm working with developers all day. That is something we all have to be more mindful about, that we think about security first and not as an afterthought. That goes for so many things.
Law firm considers Error 53 class action lawsuit against Apple as some stores authorized for repairs. I just want to say, right, because everyone writes to me telling them I'm a dickhead and I don't know anything. On Sunday, when this was listed in the Slack room, I said, this will be a class action lawsuit and everyone's going to get $25 of iTunes tokens. And that's it.
Yep.
That's all it's going to happen. And lo and behold, here this pops up on Monday afternoon. I'm prophetic. Before you write them.
I thought the same thing.
The Error 53 stuff, I think I do kind of feel, I don't feel guilty and I don't feel bad for anyone that buys a front off eBay and replaces it themselves. You know, you take your life in your hands and you get what you get. And I've done that, you know, in the past with my iPhone 4S. But this is a different world if you're talking about the thumbprint reader, because that really is a massive security feature. I think Apple have done exactly the right thing here. I don't think they've done anything wrong.
Apple's mistake here, Ewan, is a lack of communication.
Correct. Yeah,
they
should
have made this clear from the beginning. Hey,
yes.
We set it up this way. If you swap out these components, it's not going to sync together properly, and your phone's going to shut off to protect all your data.
Again, the thing is Apple did do that. It's in the instruction manual. If you get the training on how you're supposed to replace the Touch ID sensor, you would know this. And that's why Apple authorized resellers and Apple Genius Bar people know that they have to redo this pairing. It's these third-party companies that they don't have access to that documentation necessarily. But to be honest, a little Google searching and a little online, you can get that documentation. And if you read that documentation, it'll explain the whole thing. So
it's very clear for people that are involved in the repair process. For the average user who's buying an iPhone and then decides that they want to get their home button fixed through some fly by night company, that's where Apple didn't communicate.
I didn't know.
Well, do they need to? Sorry, Therese.
Well, they could have presented it as a feature, you know, and called it a tamper-resistant feature of the iPhone. I'm just kind of pulling that out of the air.
No kidding. Are you sure it was the air, not somewhere else?
Well, since it's a family show-ish, we'll stick with air.
Patrice, you had a serious point, though.
No, my serious point was I didn't know about that security feature and that you had to take care of that home button pairing.
Which ends the communications issue. There is a UK barrister has talked to The Guardian over here, and it said potentially you could see that disabling the iPhone is an offence under the Criminal Damage Act, which I've got to say, if you're talking about the fact that someone third party has taken your phone to pieces and replaced it with a device that's then not been repaired properly, that's not criminal damage. That's utter bollocks. That's not criminal damage.
Especially because they didn't follow instructions.
Yeah, and no, I'm sorry. That's a repair warranty issue. And you've breached your warranty with a repair with a reseller who can't be bothered to keep up to spec. I'm sorry. Apple's done nothing wrong. I'll slag Apple off happily when it's due, but this isn't it. This is not it. Apple has got a specialized engineer to focus on Apple Watch clock faces. I don't know why I said that with an effeminate voice, but it's just, I read this story and I was like, so you've made a complete horlicks of the current faces. Why have you got someone in? Because you're not going to make any better of it. It's just, you know, you cock faces, says Muller. Thank you, mate. You're not going to make any better of it. I just, you know, it comes down to it, you just need to know the time.
Yeah, but why is that surprising that there is some engineer somewhere who is designing or creating those clock faces?
Well, here's the thing. If Apple's going to expand functionality on the Apple Watch and add more options for complications and things like that, I mean, there is some UX, some user interface, some design things that you'd probably want to pay attention to when developing spaces. And so there's probably going to be some layouts and things that'll be more appropriate for certain kinds of data and information that maybe people want to display. So yeah, ultimately a lot of it is just getting the time, but there's a lot of other data that people do want to access, mm-hmm. and it's going to become more and more personalized for the kinds of uses that you're going to have with your Apple Watch as they add more sensors and things like that. So, I mean, this does kind of make sense that they're going to have somebody that like is thinking through, okay, this person's really focused on the health and fitness stuff, or this person is a businessman. He wants to know all about his schedule and these sorts of things. Can we build some optimized faces that make the device more useful on a day-to-day basis for that type of user?
At the end of the day, someone has to do the work. Simple as that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing that kind of shocks me about the lack of thought, if you like, in the Apple Watch faces. If you've got an Apple Watch face, mm-hmm. and I can't get mine to show here, but there we go. So there it is. Now it's gone.
Tap it.
There we go. No, but it's facing the other way. There we go.
And anytime you put
when
it backwards.
When you've got the circular faces, and I do like the analog faces, when you've got those, they kind of fill the screen. And you're like, well, I could cope with it actually being a bit smaller than that. It doesn't need to be that big. So then when you go to the digital ones, it's like almost they don't think about utilizing the space any better that they've gained by going back to a digital look, right. You know, it's just, yeah. you're still in the four corners. Now, maybe that's the touch receptors on the screen or something that's limiting that, I'm sure. And it'll be fixed in version two. But it doesn't feel like they utilize the space any better. Ian's suggesting in the chat room that I'm turning into a fanboy. Yeah, thanks, mate.
Yeah, for developer guidelines, Apple has minimum sizes for tap areas.
Yeah.
And I think that's limiting the layouts for the digital faces quite a bit.
Yeah, no, I think that's... I don't think they've done a great job of the faces at all. And when they said, oh, we've got more faces, it's going to look far better. Well, no, it's not.
No, it didn't.
But okay.
I'm happy with the one that I use. I can see where, you know, depending on your style, I use the one that's called Modular because it allows me to use complications from Dark Sky or, you know, when I'm out doing shooting stuff, or I can use the complication from TripIt when I'm traveling because it puts everything I need right in the front. So that's my favorite, and the time just comes up as a big digital number. I agree with you, and in most cases, if I'm out and about, like going to a dressy sort of thing, but I still want to wear my Apple Watch, I'll put on a standard issue chronometer style complication. But I'm pretty stoked with it, and I'm a little mind blown by how many people use Mickey and pulsating butterfly jellyfish, whatever that one is called, Flow or whatever the thing is.
Yeah.
And so many people just love that because it just, even though they have the watch for almost a year now, they're still tweaked out over the the little animation. But
you know, yeah. Mickey's foot tapping out the seconds.
No, hang on a second. Because I've got a recollection in my head, Doc, that you said the girls loved Mickey.
Yeah. When I go to about the club, a year ago. I put it in Mickey mode, guaranteed. That is a conversation startup.
Does Karen know you put it in Mickey mode?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's my job is to entertain people. I'm not going to go in a corner and bone or anything.
Oh, okay, right, I got you. It didn't need to go that far, but all right.
Yeah, she got me when I was doing this job, so the first thing I tell any girl I ever dated was, my position is to walk around the club and flirt with people, but you just need to know that it is mostly just harmless.
It's just work.
Bat winch level flirting.
Okay, right, it's really good.
My moves are almost that big now.
And Tim has posted the massively new quality of the iPhone 7 camera that's coming up. Having walked on the field at the Super Bowl the other day.
Yeah, so what we've established with this photo is that Tim might be really good at running a company, but he's really bad at taking photos.
Exactly. Everyone's good on about it, saying, oh, they're unfair giving Tim shit for it. No, they really aren't. That is a shit photo.
That's a shit photo.
And the thing is as well, right, and I mean, I've had a go at Anders this week, and I always have a go at Ian. You know, look at the picture, straighten the picture. There's great editing tools in iOS, fantastic editing tools. You can always correct for color, you can correct for straightness before you post. And Tim, you can check blur as well.
It went on his Twitter stream, though, and it was an in-the-moment thing. He's running down on the field. He's probably not very interested in sending, you know, like his focus probably wasn't sending the tweet, but it was an in-the-moment thing, and it's like, oh, this is cool here. I'm on the field, you know, after the Super Bowl win, and he's moving off to do something else. So he snaps a quick photo, throws it to Twitter, and doesn't really give it another thought.
No,
and maybe that wasn't the smartest thing to do. considering his position.
Exactly. He's not some wanker running on the field. That.
I mean, it's just a normal human thing, you know, when you're at an event and you just want to share a moment. So,
but my point would be, he's not some wanker running on the field, overexcited. He's the chief executive of a corporation of the device that he's holding. That
he's a human being.
Every fudge is going to scrutinize when he posts it up on Twitter. And you could look and go, oh, okay, maybe not.
I think the worst thing in the story that happened was he pulled it down. I think he should have just left it up and owned it, you know, and just said, hey, yeah, I'm just like a guy like anybody else. And I threw out a Twitter photo and it wasn't great. And maybe I should have reviewed it, but big deal.
You know that he should be keeping that image up. And you know that in September, he should be coming out on stage and going, we've got a great new camera in the iPhone 7. Here's one of the pictures I took with it. And everyone would piss themselves and everyone would go, good on you, Tim, for taking the piss out of yourself. But you Americans, you don't do self-deprecation. That's where you fall right down.
No, we're not nearly as good at it as the Brits.
I say I'm crap and everyone goes, oh, we can't be that crap.
And the funny thing is, Tim did post another better picture, but I guess the most hilarious.
No, he didn't, because that was published less than 3 minutes later, and it was back up in the frigging stands. You could tell from the angle. He never took that in a million years. That was taken for Tim, but it wasn't taken by Tim.
It's very possible.
It's certain.
All you had to do was turn the phone in landscape mode. The whole problem is solved. And then crop that sucker.
Well, no, you can't take the fact that he's moving. But
how about we should talk about the biggest controversy of the Super Bowl? They used 50 instead of L.
Okay.
Yeah, they. Okay, now keep in mind, I'm the guy that didn't even know what teams were playing, and I live in a city with one of the teams. But what I heard was that that when they got to 50. Whoever actually runs the Super Bowl decided that the Roman numeral thing was just getting too complicated. So they decided to stop using it because of course, what could be more complicated than L?
L.
You know, versus X, V, I, I, D, I,
do you know what?
Whatever the...
No, that's exactly what happened in Rome as well. Rome got up to 49 and they looked at it and thought, do you know what? It. Let's invade Egypt and we'll start using an Arabic text.
But they're going back. I mean, next year they said they're going back. What I heard was the designers looked at it and went, "Yeah, that design-wise, that looks really weird." Just the L. So,
L1 is going to cause so many issues with the Americans next year.
Yep, lie.
It'll be Super Bowl
lie. The
Vietnamese kids are going to love it, though.
Yeah,
it's a very common Vietnamese last name is Li.
No. That's a joke in here, right? So there's what do you call a Chinaman who lives between Dudley and Kidderminster?
What?
Yamin Lai. which you're never going to get because you don't live over here, which is a really bad accent thing for the people that live in the black country, which is kind of northwest of Birmingham. But Lye is a village that lives, the L-Y-E, that's a village that lies between Dudley and Kidderminster. And, but Yao Min means you are in Lye. Yao Min Lye is a Chinaman who lives between Dudley and Kidderminster, but there you go. So you have to explain it, and it just doesn't work. So
no, you have to explain it, Joe.
It's Lye is an acid chemical.
But at least now I can appreciate the joke.
Ian's just putting claim to cricket to solve the problem with American football, because it's not football, it's American football. Football is football. You're American football.
Yes.
With no feet.
I agree with that.
Last story then. Apple stores now offering Belkin Screen Protector application service. Yes! Because I've never put one of those on properly. They always look shit after I've done them. It doesn't matter how hard I wipe that frigging screen. There's always one speck of dust on it.
Which is annoying as
I can sit there with an
you get a cat hair stuck
on it. I've done it with an anti-static band on both sodding wrists. And still, there's a speck of dust underneath.
You know, when we first started doing them in the GR, Genius Room, we had this machine in the back. And it was like a fan or a dehumidifier, but it was specifically a dust collection thing. And it was for two reasons. Putting screen protectors on the early iOS devices, and the iMac had just become pop-off screen. and put in that screen back on the iMac without getting the dust. God. Like, I would, so someone would come in and have to do a hard drive swap or do like a graphics board swap, whatever. I could change a logic board, a graphics board in the iMac in sub 20 minutes. I would spend the next 30 to 45 minutes getting the screen on and off, trying to keep the damn dust out. Yeah. And then if you get someone who's super OCD about it, like me or a couple of guys I work with, we would literally be there for almost an hour trying to put the damn thing right. So it got to the point where people would come in and goes, my hard drive died in my iMac. I'm like, okay, here's a piece of Velcro, and here's the lightest, like, 2 terabyte external drive we have. Put it together and stick this sucker to the back, learn to boot externally, and force it to boot from that. Because if I open it, it will be dusty, and there's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah, no. If they do it, and they do it right, worth every penny. Worth every penny.
Mm-hmm.
I got some secrets for you if you ever want to know how to do it. There's some really cool things you can do in order to get it to work. But it is definitely somewhat of a bitch. I ain't going to lie.
Okay. So why don't you do that as a podcast for us, and we'll stick it up on it.
If you watch the videos of them doing the process, one of the keys is that Belkin provides this sort of somewhat sticky material that you do right before you put the screen on. So it's basically like, you know, those lint rollers you use with the sticky tape.
Oh, yeah.
You're basically doing that over the screen to get any residual little, you know, like Jeff would say, cat hairs or something like that.
Yep, that's one of the secrets.
Very good. This podcast and others is brought to you by UK2. We are stuffed if they disappear because they're absolutely fantastic. We've been for 8 years now. Pick up all the bandwidth. They pick up all the hosting charges. They pick up a 3.5 terabyte server full of data. We can cope with any number of downloads. We're not going to get any kind of DDoS attack or anything that's going to take us off, I hope. But, you know, they're just awesome. Please, please, please support them because they support us. Go to britishtechnetwork.com/UK2 if you just want to sign in, or go to britishtechnetwork.com/sponsors if you want the offer code, and you can get like 20% off your basket. It's an incredible value to us. And just tweet out, just say thanks for looking after UK2. Thanks for looking after British Tech, UK2, because you're absolutely brilliant, because we love their shows. And even if you don't love our shows, do that, because UK2 are great. We love them. Thank you ever so much. Cheers. And next month, we've got a new sponsor coming along. But I'm not going to say who it is, but it's going to be cool.
Wow.
It's going to be really cool. Know what I'm seeing? Can you see what I'm saying? Yeah.
You're clever, Ewan.
They're busting, says Malone. That's the only thing he's ever said in the chat room that you should click on and should agree with. Right. Time for the cool things. And, Patrice, you get first one.
Yeah, I'm going to pick a podcast. Has any one of you issues with sleeping or sleeping in?
Was because alone or with someone?
Does it matter?
It does if you're married for 20 years, yeah.
Well, this podcast, it's called Sleep With Me. And
yes!
It's not...
Oh, okay, sorry.
So why am I not on this show?
I mean, it's really awesome. It is. I mean, a podcast usually has to be somewhat exciting, interesting, whatever. This podcast isn't. It is, by definition, very, very, very dull and boring. I mean, the episode I listened, he was basically in a voice with just one tone, very monotone. I think reading a recipe and talking about it, and it was, I mean, it's completely random, and the episodes are, I think, an hour or 2 hours long, so very long, perhaps. So you have time to sleep in, you don't have to think about, oh, I have to be asleep in 15 minutes because they're in the podcast, and no, it's just boring, but it helps. If you have issues sleeping, this thing will put you to sleep. That's it.
It's perfect. I love that it's the here you go, the most boring podcast ever, so that you'll fall asleep. That's awesome.
What a recommendation.
We used to have this funny joke back in the East Coast, and it was when ESPN first came out. Like, ESPN was just getting big, and they finally made it to like two stations. And we used to say, you know, you have insomnia when you're up super, super late, you try watching everything on TV, and you turn to ESPN, and there's two white guys boxing. Because this is not very common in the U.S. And then, so there used to be kind of a joke about staying up too late, not being able to sleep. And I had the worst insomnia as a kid. Still do, actually. I will check this out.
So you suffer from, you're a nightclub DJ and you suffer from insomnia.
One of the reasons why I do what I do is because I'm going to be up anyway, so I might as well make money doing it. Like, I don't do too much. I'm not getting paid. And it's funny because everyone goes, oh, my God, at your age, like, you can still handle that? I was like, I can't sleep anyway, so I might as well get paid for it.
Maybe I should start being a DJ.
You know, Mueller, just about every girl when I lived in Japan said that.
Said what? You have to qualify. People that are listening on audio.
Read the chat. People listening on audio don't need to hear it.
What?
That.
Never mind. That was a Jeff joke. Stay away from it.
Don't touch it. Okay, fair enough.
Especially you, Ewan, don't touch it.
Don't touch it. Da-da-da-da.
Oh, that was awesome.
Thanks, man. Jeff, have you got a cool thing for us?
I do, and this one is actually totally safe. So
family-friendly.
Totally family-friendly. So, you know, I have a 38-millimeter Apple Watch, and I've always wanted, like, since Apple announced these, I wanted to have a leather loop band for it. But Apple doesn't make leather loop band for the Apple Watch. So I went to AliExpress, and I got one.
And now, does it click in, or is it a shitty connection thing, adapter type stuff?
No, it's great. I mean, it locks in place, really solid.
Okay, that's good, because the thing is, I would pay. I have 130 quid waiting to be separated from my wallet for a Milanese loop that fits my wrist, and I can't get one because Apple haven't made one. But
which is totally lame.
So the loopy, strappy things. I love my strap because it doesn't damage my laptop when I use it, or cut into me when I lean on the desk and stuff. So that's awesome. You have to put a link in the chat room, mate. Most definitely. You have
already done.
It's in there.
And so snapshot. Here's the deal. $20.33. But if you get the app, the AliExpress app on your iPhone, and do the order from there, it costs less. You get a discount on pretty much everything you buy from AliExpress when you use your iPhone app. So I spent, I don't know, it was like $18 shipped to get this thing. And it showed up a few days ago. It's really leather, and it's not quite, it's not as soft as the leather loop bands that Apple sells, but it's still it's really nice. It feels really comfortable. I'm really happy with this thing.
$20.
It's 100% genuine leather Magnique buckle loop.
Yes. Oh.
It's Magnique. Awesome.
Yeah. So hold on. I have got to show you the
packaging. You know where to get that from? I can guarantee you to get it.
Oh, well,
Americans lazily say magnetic. And if you say magnetic really lazily, it probably does sound like magnetic. And so that's probably where they got it from.
Contracted design with U Life contracted and not simple.
Read the bottom one.
Genuine leather strap. Make sure that when we're neat and submissive.
Yep.
Bend over, Jeffrey.
So I didn't understand when I purchased this, that was part of having to wear it. But it seems now that I need to make sure that my place is always clean and that I am submissive.
Angela couldn't agree more.
No, she couldn't agree more.
And you can God bless Google Translate.
So you can get this in black, red, blue, like a khaki brownie type finish, and like a beigey brownie type finish.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing 38 and 42 mil. So
I have a blue 38 millimeter leather loop.
38 millimeter. Sorry.
And it's awesome. It's exactly what I wanted. And I would have been happy to give Apple $80 or whatever they sell these for, but they don't make it. So I went to AliExpress, $20. It took about, from the time I ordered to the time I had it, was almost 3 weeks. And most of that was just the shipping time while it comes out of China and travels, God only knows where,
Jeffrey,
to get to Colorado.
There is going to be a punch-up, I'm afraid. Because I've just gone to try and buy it, and it says, sorry, this item is no longer available.
Oh, no.
Has anyone else got that?
Yeah, but you know, I think I have a company for you, Ewan, because Karen's friend just bought her a Milanese Loop. And I was like thinking, oh my God, her friend spent $150 on it because she just got her Apple Watch for Christmas. And it was one of these AliExpress ones, and it's amazing. Like, the quality is amazing, and the thing is way, way long. Like, it almost wraps all the way around and connects to the opposite end on her wrist. So I'm like, and that's on the 38. So I'm saying the 42 must be longer. If I find you the name of the company, I have the box over there. I'll send you a link.
Yeah, do it.
But it is available on Amazon.
There's one in gold here that I've come up. I've just typed Milanese in on AliExpress to get a search, and there's a gold version that's come up, which looks really tacky and horrible. Looks like something that my uncle would have worn in the 70s. But
oh, perfect.
On a red LED Accurist watch.
Yeah. The one that we did find, it did come from Amazon, so you don't even have to order from AliExpress.
Right, your mission then, Doc, is to find me a link, because that is awesome.
Yeah, I will send it to you right
now. And they also do they do an enclosure. That's quite interesting. They do a high-quality magnetic Milanese loop band, but they do a matching coloured metal closure. So you can have gold, rose gold, silver or black. And you get a little closure that puts on the top. So even if you've got steel, it closes it up and it shows it as the same. That's cool.
Very cool.
Excellent. Doc, don't get distracted. Find what I need first before you say anything. But Doc, what's your cool thing?
My cool
glasses,
pig,
that's for sure.
My cool pig is an application called Vertu. I hope it's Vertu. It kind of reminds me of Vanuatu. Anyway, what it is a virtual machine implementation that is done first time ever the way Apple wants you to do it. Parallel and VMware do something where they tack into the OS X kernel space, and Apple's not a big fan of that. That also leaves you open to some security flaws and some hardware screwing up. In most cases, people don't really have these problems, but the possibility is there. These Vertu guys, once I believe it was Yosemite, dropped out the hypervisor look. And without getting too nerdy on you, basically Hypervisor is like running your virtual machine in an actual Petri dish where none of its tentacles actually touch any of your actual OSS space or user space, or it doesn't touch your OSX kernel space. And it's still able to communicate with the hardware through this technology Apple and put in the Yosemite called Hypervisor. And so far, it's pretty amazing and it's fast. And I've been a long-time Parallels user. I'm on Parallels 11 right now.
And you can't beat coherence mode in Parallels.
Yeah, so this is trippy because it's free, and they send you a bunch of VM appliances already available. You can just grab a Linux appliance and drop it if you want to goof off and do something. But it's just been fun to play with. I don't know if I will leave Parallels yet because I'm maybe I just feel like I have to pay them suckers $60 a year. But this is kind of cool, and I like... You can tell it's faster because of the way it's not messing with the kernel. It's definitely quicker than Parallels, and maybe Parallels will jump in on this and figure it out. And I mean, I just feel a little bit more supported around Parallels. I've been using it since it was Orange Micro way back in the day. Yeah. But this is pretty cool.
Yeah, and I mean, you can see that this is how Apple wants it because it's available in the App Store. It's not a
yes,
separate
it's the only one available in the App Store. Yes.
Yeah.
Have you played with it yet, Patrice?
Hmm?
Have you played with it yet?
No, but I'm definitely gonna do it the minute I'm off air here.
One of my enterprise friends was the one who sent it to me, and he said, "Here's a follow-up article which I'll post it right now from something called theflounder.wordpress.com." He does a great walkthrough and explains why Vertu's tits are bigger than Parallels and why you should check it out.
Moving on, Adam.
I have a pick, something I've been waiting on for, I think, over a year now. And it's a game called Firewatch from a company called Campo, or a developer called Campo Santo. And I think this is their first game. But there was also co-involvement from Panic on this game, from Panic Software. And it is a beautiful game. It's interesting. I'm only... Three days into it, kind of each level or whatever you want to call it is called a day. And without giving too much away, what it is it's kind of a story-driven first-person game where you are a guy working in a fire watch lookout in a forest. And the reason you get there is due to some events in your life and some things that happen. So there's this whole story that's built up, and you end up going through the game being sent on these little tasks to do throughout the national forest, you know, like tracking down people who are setting off fireworks and things like that. And then a story unfolds from there. And the only person only other person in the game really that you're interacting with is another woman who's kind of like the captain who, you know, is giving you instructions, and then you talk to her and you start having this conversation. So you have options that come up to kind of guide the conversation the way you want to guide it. So you kind of create your own space, and it's just visually really, really stunning. Graphics look great, and it's totally sucked me in. It's very, very interesting. I don't know where it's going yet. But I'm really, really enjoying the game. And I thought I would when I saw some of the early demos and things like that. And you can get it on Steam for Mac, Windows, or Linux. Or if you have a PlayStation 4, it's out there. And it's $20 US.
Excellent, mate. Good one.
I'm loving it, too.
God, the graphics are amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will tell you, you know, I'm running it on my 2011 MacBook Pro. It's an i7. It does have some pretty hefty requirements in terms of, like, your graphics processor and your CPU. I really had to dial everything down to kind of get it to even sort of run. But even in its lowest settings for me, I think it looks great. You know, and I've got everything cranked down. So if you're on a good modern Mac with a good graphics processor and stuff like that, it's going to look unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm running it on a mid-2012 2.6 gigahertz Core i7, and my fans just blast the whole time I'm playing the game. It is kicking my laptop's butt, and I don't care because it's really cool, and I'm loving it.
Fun. It's a fun game so far. Very interesting. It's, you know, it's not like fast action first person shooter. It's more intellectual than that. It's very story driven. So
you are in a room. There is a door to your left and straight ahead and right. No, very good. My cool thing, I need to talk to you very directly, Lee Ellis, and say, you bastard, for recommending this on Twitter. There's a few people who have recommended games, but Lee has recommended quite possibly the most annoying and leg-numbing game that there possibly is on iOS at the moment that I haven't already played, and it's Super Sharp. It is absolutely brilliant. It's like Cut the Rope, if you remember that one, but it's not. So you've got geometric shapes that you need to fit through apertures, or where you get one or two or three or five or seven cuts of it to then get things to happen, to get coloured objects to meet coloured objects. So if you're looking at the video at the moment, you'll see that there's a white block above a place where I'm got a black block below, and I've got a black circle that I obviously need to make roll across this surface to then hit the black square to get red to red, or black to black, or purple to purple, or pink to pink. And it's an addictive, addictive game. It is brilliant. And I have sat some mornings here in the studio with my legs going numb on the toilet playing this. It is brilliant. So go get it and play it. Super Sharp. I've got no idea how much it costs.
Cool.
But there's in-app purchases for it, so I think it's free. But it's addictive. You will not regret buying this. Lee, you're still a bastard, though. Just want you to know. Thanks, man.
It is $1.99 in US and in the US store, so whatever that translates to in British.
Yeah. Pound.
I'm well along. I'm into the third world at the moment, so it works.
It's crazy.
Where can we get a hold of you, Patrice?
As always, every week on the Mac Show here on the British Tech Network, and also in the Snack Room, on Twitter at casual_kitchen, and all the links and everything I do on thepatrice.com.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much for coming along. Jeff, thanks for standing in, pal. Where are you?
Thanks for having me on. It's always fun to hang out with you. You can find me at macobserver.com along with a bunch of other awesome writers. And you can find me on freshbrewtales.com and on a ton of podcasts, including the newest one that I started doing a while ago, the Mac Observer's Daily Observations.
Excellent, mate. And you'll be back in a moment for the big show.
Yes, I will.
Dr. Octacus, where are you, mate?
You can find me a couple of times a week here hanging out on the British Tech Network and all over the interspace at DOCROCK and somewhere shoving roasted meat in my pie hole.
Yes.
And taking pictures.
Nom nom.
Don't forget burning shit with lasers.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
Pew pew pew.
My name's Doc and I'm a meat roasted addict.
Didn't you just put up a store or something?
Yeah. Yes, I did. I did open up the ad store.
I retweeted it and you haven't pimped it, dude. That's not good.
Yeah, you know, I don't do that too often.
But yeah, get it out there. Come on.
Okay, so
people should go watch it because you did a great. I love the video that you have up on that site.
All the videos.
Thank you.
Yeah,
it's extraloha.com is the name of the site, and I am adding things that I can easily replicate. And you know, I do a lot of one-off stuff, but I am trying to get into the business of doing things that are more easily replicatable and, you know, able to ship wherever. I am working on setting up my UK shipping, so I will have it there as soon as I can get over the price shock.
Yeah,
paid. There has to be a better way.
The USPS, though, mate, I know they've taken the piss and it's taken it 2 days to get it 2 kilometers, but once they do it, they're not that slow and they are an awful lot cheaper, and you don't tend to pay import taxes badly with them. So,
yeah, I hope I did that paperwork stuff correct, but I put review samples, Ewan, but they wanted to know, like, the size and weight of each bottle and what it was made out of, and I'm like, holy crap. Why don't you guys just come and stick your finger in me, bum, and know I'm not going to send a bomb?
Okay, maybe. Muller's stood up and he's offering, so I don't know if that means anything.
No, he probably has those, like, really fat arthritic knuckles. I don't like that.
No, you prefer a smooth knuckle up your ass. Yes, of course. Well, Jesus Christ, dude.
This reminds me of a pinch conversation about when you're...
Learn punctuation, for Christ's sake, man.
He shoots and leaves, damn it.
There's the show title anyway. And last but by no means least, where are you, Adam?
You can find me over at the MacCast.com, also MacCast on iTunes, MacCast on Twitter, and pretty much every place else if you're on social media. And Jeff also forgot to mention he's on another show with me, the iOS show, along with Michael Johnston at the iOSshow.com.
I'm just sitting in my head trying to work out how much Apple are going to censor I like a smooth knuckle up my arse. And which words they're going to bleep.
I'm assuming smooth.
Yeah. My name is Ewan Rankin. You get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. We'll be back with a big show in 20 minutes. And it'll be great and it'll be fun. And I'll try and post this before it gets to the end of next week. I promise. Honest. Thanks for listening. Thanks an awful lot for listening.
Christ.
Watch out for those rough knuckles.
Rough, hairy knuckles.
Oh, no one said anything about hair. Jesus Christ, that's perverse.